Catholic Radio Indy now presents Faith in Action, a program that looks at how everyday people put their faith into action in their everyday lives. Our program is underwritten in part by Franciscan St. Francis Health, providing faith-based integrated health care, a recipient of HealthGrade's 2015 America's 100 Best Hospitals Award, and by Marian University, a great Catholic university dedicated to providing students with excellence in teaching and learning in the Franciscan and liberal arts tradition, preparing transformative leaders for service to the world. And now, here's today's edition of Faith in Action. This is Faith in Action on Catholic Radio. I'm Jim Ganley. Our co-host is MJ Crowder.
Jim Ganley.
Well, Christmas just around the corner.
I know.
St. Nick will be showing up anytime.
You know what? I love St. Nicholas. It's for me a perfect, I don't want to say foretaste for Christmas, because when I was a kid, Advent was penitential, just like Lent. Mm-hmm. And so, but we kind of got a little treat with St. Did you celebrate St. Nicholas when you were a kid?
No, the feast?
We did. We put our shoes outside our bedroom door, and I used to snitch one of Daddy's big boots, hunting boots.
Might as well go for big.
So yeah, that's right around the corner. You know, I want to remind our listeners, I think all of our year-end letters are just about out, are they not?
Yes, only a couple of times a year do we actually send out a letter to our listeners, and they are solicitations for funds, and we do need to remind people that this station, these stations now, all three of them, are listener-supported, and we just absolutely cannot function without donations from listeners. If the listener donations were to dry up, Catholic Radio would dry up shortly thereafter, because one makes the other work. It's that simple. So we have sent out letters. If you're in our database, you'll be getting one or have gotten one. Please read it over. Please do what you can to help us out in that regard with a gift if you're able to do that. And if you didn't get a letter, it's not because we don't like you. It's just because we don't know you and we don't have you in our database. So you could fix that. You could just call here and give us your name and address, and we'd be happy to get you a letter. Or you can just go to our website. We're going to have it published on the website as well. And you can make a donation on the website during this period or any other time for that matter. The website is CatholicRadioIndy.org, CatholicRadioIndy.org. And again, we really like the idea of communicating by mail a couple times a year with listeners anyhow. It gives us a little chance to share some news with them and that sort of thing. And it's always a good when we see where all the response is coming from, what areas of town, what parishes, that sort of thing. So if you got a letter, please respond to it however you can. And if you didn't get one, we'll go to the website and make a contribution there as well. And just a reminder, I guess we don't do it very often, but Catholic Radio is a 501c3 corporation. Gifts are 100% tax deductible. So if that, as you get near the end of the year here, that's something, you know, you get a lot of solicitations in the mail. And the reason you get so many at this time of the year is a lot of people for tax purposes look and say, oh, if I give a little more to certain charities, it'll have a good effect on my taxes. And that's kind of a selfish reason, but it really helps out you and it helps out the organization. So I am perfectly legitimate, 100%, you know, encouraged by everybody. So if you fall into that category, make a really big generous check to Catholic Radio or whatever it takes to get your donations in line for tax purposes.
Our guest today on Faith in Action is our returning our guest, our favorite historian, Sandra Measle. And of course, she's been the author of The Da Vinci Hoax, along with other books. Welcome, Sandra.
Well, thank you for having me back.
You know, we started the year talking about the Reformation. We started way back with, in January, King Henry VIII. And it was really kind of interesting because I think it was about that time that the series Victoria was starting. Mm-hmm. So it kind of came alive. Our talks with you were very interesting as I was watching that at the same time on Netflix. And they were kind of historically mostly correct with that series.
As far as I know.
Yeah. You know, I would like to. We're going to button that up, and then we're going to get into more Christmassy things today. I have in front of me a wonderful report that I think our listeners might be very interested in. It, you know, I driving around town, I saw in several Lutheran churches and other areas around town, they would say 500 years celebration. This is a 500 years. And actually, I think personally, after our conversations about Martin Luther, that when we hear people today, and I know, Sandra, you have, I know Jim has, we are introduced to people and they say, oh, he's a Lutheran. Oh, well, you know, it's just like that. That's almost Catholic. You know, that's almost Catholic. And I've thought so many times Martin Luther would turn in his grave if he believed that. I mean, truly, 500 years later. So I want to read something from the very first sentence that of this report. And then I want you to tell our listeners where they can get this, because I think this is a wealth of information and knowledge, and really kind of takes our year together and kind of puts it all together in this report that you wrote. Our grandfathers would not recognize the Reformation depicted in contemporary history books. I thought that's so true. No longer do scholars launch verbal barrages at each other in defense of particular religious positions as if history were the handmaiden of apologetics. Perfect. That's perfect.
Well, it's true. Regardless of the personal religious views of the different living historians, they are trying to be fair. They are trying to give you a picture of what happened to the best of their ability. And the best book on the Reformation that came out this year is Reformations by Carlos Eire, E-I-R-E. He's Catholic and he's a professor at Yale. And it's the total overview of the Reformation, very nicely illustrated, because it's a thick book, but you can read it chapter by chapter.
Okay, now this report and the Catholic world, our listeners, I think, would find very interesting. It was published October 30th, but how do our listeners get into this website?
You can go find the website of Catholic World Report, which is a web magazine. You can just Google my name, Sandra Miesel, M-I-E-S-E-L, rhymes with diesel, plus Reformation, and you'll get a link to it. And this is an overview of current Reformation scholarship, with particular attention to the Lutheran branch and the Anglican branch. I don't get into Calvin very much in the article.
But it is, I think it's a wonderful way, if you missed any of our talks, or maybe go through the podcast, because they're all on our website, and they're all still there, starting back in January. Go back through the podcast, maybe listen to them, because really, on our podcast, Sandra, we just kind of scratched the surface, really. We didn't really get in as deep as, but with everyone, you did give us books that could be referenced and that. So if our listeners are interested in finding out a little bit more, they could either get into the books or I found the article to be very rich with lots of information.
Thank you. And I'll say that Catholic World Report ran a great many articles about different aspects of the Reformation. So you could get a start on your self-education just by reading their articles.
Okay. So the end of next week, we have the Feast of St. Nicholas. And many of our listeners will know I'm number 12 of 14, and my brother Nick, who's a year older than I was born on December 6th. And what my mother and father did is we were named for the saints' days that we were born on. Or before the day before the day after. I was Mary, because my Margaret Mary Alico was mine, and Nick was born on St. Nicholas, Feast of St. Nicholas. So let's talk about him, because I think it's a wonderful tradition. I did grow up with it. On December 5th, we would put stockings out or shoes out. Where did that come from? Tell us where that little tradition came from.
Well, first, St. Nicholas, there is a historical St. Nicholas who was the Bishop of Bari. He was not the Bishop of Bari. His bones are in Bari. He was the Bishop of Myra in Asia Minor, which is now Turkey. And he had such a reputation for goodness to the poor that all these legends grew up around him, starting in the 4th century. How he had saved three poor young girls from being sold into prostitution by dropping bags of gold through the window. And those gifts, he is the gift giver, and therefore it became a custom to give gifts on his feast day. And he also brought back to life three young men who had been murdered by a wicked innkeeper and salted down as long pork.
Oh my God. Now, I hadn't heard that, but I know there's value to salting pork. But wait a second. Brought them back to life?
Yes, he brought them back to life in the legend.
I hadn't heard
that. And in his less miraculous ways, he brought grain in time of famine. He stopped an unjust execution by simply walking up and punching the executioner. He was not a gentle saint, I assure you. He's supposed to have flashing eyes and a flaming bishop's crozier.
Oh, my goodness.
And he would therefore punish the unjust and reward the just. Now, Nicholas became an enormously popular saint. He's the patron saint of Russia from the time of his conversion. He's a patron saint of Bari in Italy, because in the 11th century, men from Bari went to his old city, which by then time was a ruin, and dug him up and carried him home, because otherwise the men from Venice would have gotten the bones, and we don't want the men from Venice having another set of relics.
No.
And his bones are still there in southern Italy. Now, this year, archaeologists announced that they had excavated the bishop's cathedral in Myra and found a stone sarcophagus, which was presumably the one that they took the bones out of.
Oh, my word. So, oh, how interesting is that?
Yeah, oh, relic running. We could do a whole show
relic running. There's even a word for it.
Yes, there was a lot of it going on in the Middle Ages. Well, anyway, St. Nicholas is very popular in medieval times. Hundreds and thousands of churches are dedicated to him. Countries claim him as a patron. He's very popular in Northern Europe because his feast day falls in the wintertime when they need a little cheer. The Reformation, of course, damps that down, but St. Nicholas lingered on even in Protestant countries as a folk saint. So you have the Dutch with Sinterklaas, and which turns into, by several turns of history, into our Santa Claus, because the Dutch settled in New York and brought the customs of giving gifts on St. Nicholas Day with them. And Washington Irving, in the 19th century American writer, wrote about those customs. And then Clement Clark Moore wrote The Visit from St. Nicholas, which crystallized our concept of St. Nicholas with the red suit trimmed with white fur. And then Thomas Nast, who was a great political cartoonist at the popular New York paper, drew a cartoon of St. Nicholas matching Clement Clark Moore's description. And then Haden Sundblom, who was the commercial artist who did all the classic Coca-Cola commercials.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
that's
right. Yeah.
Created the modern American idea of Santa Claus with his red suit.
I remember that, sure.
Meanwhile, in Europe, he stays as a bishop, or at least in sort of bishop's robes, as Father Christmas in England, as Père Noël in France, as Sankt Nicholas in the Germanic countries, and he brings gifts to good children, and he has a sidekick who in Germany is Necht Ruprecht in Austria, or Black Peter.
Yeah, see, I'm familiar with that, yeah.
Or the Schwarzer Mann.
Yes, yeah.
As his sidekick with a whip who will thrash bad children, but of course no children are really bad.
Yeah, but I think it's Connect Ruprecht. Yeah, that's it.
Yes.
And yeah, so you have to be good or you get bad things. We need to take a break. Yes. And we'll be right back.
Have you ever thought about joining the Catholic Church? Have you just wanted to explore the Catholic faith? All you need to do is call your local Catholic Church for more information. We are always happy to help you in your journey to discover and learn more about the Catholic faith. We have classes that are almost year-round, and the classes and information sessions do not involve making a commitment, and there is no pressure to join. Please call your local Catholic parish for more information today and start the journey of one day possibly becoming Catholic as well. God bless.
Welcome back to Faith in Action. Our guest today is Sandra Measle. She's, of course, our local historian who tells us all kinds of wonderful things about, makes history so much more interesting, for me at least, and I know many of our listeners have enjoyed the episodic stories that we get here. We're talking today about St. Nicholas, and we're going to move into the Magi. Mm-hmm. It is kind of interesting, just to button up on St. Nicholas, that there are many different countries who have the same figure, but just a little bit different twist.
Yeah.
You know, a little bit different.
In Russia, he's called Grandfather Frost, even after the revolution. They still had to have a figure that was giving gifts, even mm-hmm. though they couldn't have a saint, of course.
Grandfather Frost.
Yes. And they have Grandfather Frost trees.
Oh, my goodness.
In Russia. And now, of course, people can honor St. Nicholas. Very popular subject in Byzantine art. I have an icon of St. Nicholas.
An icon of St.
Yes,
Nicholas.
In fact, I have two.
Oh, my goodness.
In one of which he holds a sword because he defended the city against whomever was about to invade the city, the Turks, I assume.
Oh, interesting. Okay, so St. Nicholas, so we validated that celebrate away, Feast of St. Nicholas on December 5th, though. I missed it one year, and I said, no, kids, it's on December 6th. You get it the evening.
Yeah.
Either one.
We did that with our children. They put out their shoes on St. Nicholas Day and got candy bars.
Yeah, little things. Little things.
So
there was always an orange in the bottom of of mine when we were growing up. That was to symbolize, I think, the gold coins. Mm-hmm. Okay, on to Christmas, and on to we talk about Christmas, we talk about St. Nicholas, we talk about Santa Claus, we talk about the birth of Jesus, but we don't talk very much about the Magi. So it's kind of, let's unravel the mystery here, because there are many different stories about the Magi.
Yes, there are. The only thing we know for sure is what's in St. Matthew's Gospel. The wise men came from the East, they gave gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh, and they went back home. That is the extent of the accurate knowledge. Now, this was, of course, not enough for people, and the Feast of Epiphany, which now we think of only with the Magi, was in the East a triple celebration of the visit of the wise men, the baptism of Christ, and the miracle at Cana. And it was three different manifestations of Christ, which is what Epiphany means, manifestation. But nowadays, we only think about it in terms of the Magi. Actually, the Epiphany was celebrated as a church festival before Christmas was.
Oh, really?
Yes. Christmas is the earliest celebration of Christmas known was 75 years after the Epiphany was being celebrated in the East. And very early representations in catacombs art of the three wise men and the star and all that. And originally, the three wise men are assumed to come from Persia because the Magi were the priestly caste of Zoroastrian Persia. And, well, they study the stars, so they must be Persians. And they are represented in Persian costume, which means trousers, tunics, and soft caps. And they present their gifts using Roman court etiquette with covered hands on a tray.
Sure.
They don't touch the gift. They don't touch the child. They just offer the gift. Now, by the time of Charlemagne, they were envisioned as kings because you have Old Testament prophecies of the king shall come from Arabia and Saba and bring these gifts. So they're no longer in Persian costume, they're in vaguely medieval costume, which gets more and more fantastic as the Middle Ages wear on. And then you have turbans and weird hats and brocade costumes. And then they become representative of the three known continents, Europe, Asia, Africa. They become representative of the three ages of man. The old king is Melchior, who gives the gift, is Caspar, who gives the gift first. The middle king, who's middle-aged, is Melchior, who gives the frankincense. And the third king, Balthazar, the young man, was represented increasingly after the 14th century as a black African, because Europeans were finally encountering black Africans, and he's realistically presented. And he's usually wearing a turban and wonderful exotic clothes. And then you also had a custom of representing the patrons who had paid for the painting, or the king, or the emperor, as one of the three kings, usually the last one. The Botticelli Adoration of the Magi that's in the National Gallery of Art in Washington.
So not an additional king.
No.
But a substitution.
Yes, a substitution. They have the three of the Medici, because the Medici were paying for the painting, and they represented themselves as the three kings. And it is kind of funny to see Balthazar with a big Habsburg nose, and so forth and so forth. And the Magi bring gifts in Southern European cultures. That's the gift-giving day. So you have a lot of celebration of that in Mexico and Spain and Italy. And that's where king cakes come from, because those were the cakes that you baked on Epiphany.
You know, it's interesting you say that, because my sister married a Venezuelan, and the feast of the Epiphany, that January 6th is a real celebration for them. Mm-hmm. They save back some gifts from Christmas and open them on January 6th. Mm-hmm. And it's, I think it's kind of lovely, because it kind of elongates it. It really is the 12 days of Christmas doesn't start December 12th. It starts December 25th, mm-hmm. and then concludes on January 6th. So really,
that's the 12 days of Christmas.
That's the 12 days. Yeah.
And then you open carnival season, and in the king cake, there will be beans or some other token. And the person who gets the token in their piece of cake will be the king of carnival, queen of carnival, or whatever. And now, of course, king cakes are a big business in New Orleans, but in France, they're made of puff pastry with an apricot glaze.
Ooh, that sounds lovely. That sounds lovely. If you're just now tuning in, listeners, Sandra Measel is with us. She's our guest on Faith in Action and has been our returning guest. I love your story, Sandra, because, you know, for me, I was kind of glazed over in grade school and high school when it came to history. Mm-hmm. And you really kind of have made it come alive for us with making it more real, you know.
Well, I hope so. That's my goal in life. Let me say a few things about the cult of the Magi at Cologne. Now, the bodies, the remains of the three Magi are enshrined in this magnificent golden box, designed by Nicholas of Verdun in the 12th century. And supposedly the relics were brought from Milan to Cologne by Frederick Barbarossa, and there they have remained. And their symbols are on the coat of arms of the city of Cologne, the Bishop of Cologne, the University of Cologne, and so on, which are the three crowns. And each Magi, Caspar, Melchior, and Balthazar, got his own coat of arms in the Middle Ages. And then if you write CMB with crosses between them and the year on your door on Epiphany, that in Germanic lands, that's supposed to bring you good luck for the new year. It means Christ blesses the world.
Now, that's interesting, because we just started doing that at our parish a couple years ago. Father would give us at Christmas time chalk that he mm-hmm. blessed, mm-hmm. a little piece of chalk and a little piece of paper that kind of explained mm-hmm. what you put on your door. But everyone who comes to visit us said, you got something on your door out there. You got some scratching on your front door. But it is kind of a point, a moment of evangelization, if you say, yeah, that the Feast of the... You know, Germans do it quite often. I've never seen it here in the United States except for... Mm-hmm. You know, me and a few other Catholics. But Germans, that's a big thing to go out and put it on their front door.
Yes, it is. And when I heard about this, because I have brought along a catalog of an exhibit in Cologne, and they have little holy cards from 18th and 19th century, just like the pieces of paper that you got, telling people what they're doing. And I write it on my door, for what that's worth, being
I think
mostly
it's
German
cool.
extraction.
Yeah, I think it's kind of cool. Our guest today, Sandra Measel. We talked in the first half a little bit about St. Nicholas. We're talking about the Magi and the history of that. And really, the whole point is to make our Christmas experience, Advent and Christmas experience, a little bit deeper and to really stretch it out. There's so many people who the day after Christmas, or maybe the 27th or 20th, down comes the Christmas tree and it's all over with. Maybe that's because we put it up, you know, on, yes. you know, November 20th. Well, yes. this year was early. It was November 23rd, Thanksgiving, so put it up early. But it is really, as Catholics, it's a longer season.
Yes, and the Magi stand for the manifestation of Christ to the non-Jewish world. The shepherds stand for the Jewish world.
Oh, no, say that again. That's interesting. I never heard that before.
The shepherds who come on Christmas Eve stand for Christ's revelation to the Jews, and the Magi who come at some point later, maybe several months later or even a year later, are Christ's revelation to the non-Jewish world. And so you close both halves of it, just like the ox is the symbol of the Jews and the ass is a symbol of the Gentiles.
Well, that's something I didn't know.
Well, they were. In fact, the very oldest representation of the Nativity is baby Jesus with the ox and the ass. No Mary, no Joseph, no nothing.
Oh, really? So the camel, no camel, no camel, ox and ass. Okay, so that's it. No cow. No cow, no lambs. All right, so we kind of have taken creative license with a lot of our nativity scenes, have we not? Okay, one quick question before we're drawing to a close. Time frame of the Magi. What do you think, Sandra?
Well, if they're coming from Persia, they're going to take a very long time. Now, there's another theory. There's a new book by Father Dwight Longnecker suggesting that they came from the Arabic kingdom of the Nabataeans, which is maybe 120 miles from Jerusalem. And they could have, in that case, come in a couple of months, certainly within a couple of months. And that does fit. It has been suggested by historians. The Nabataeans were very cosmopolitan. They were open to a lot of different religious views and very wealthy. It was a trading center. The Nabataean capital at Petra is the location of Indiana Jones and the Holy Grail.
Oh, sure.
With those beautiful pink stone buildings. Well, if the Magi came from there, they would have seen those beautiful pink stone buildings. And that's a comforting thought.
There you go. Our guest today on Faith in Action, Sandra Measle. God bless you for being our guest. And then we look forward the first of the year. Let's talk about the brave early missionaries to the barbarians.
Yes. That when the Roman Empire falls and all these barbarian tribes have come into Europe, well, you have to convert them. A lot of them, interestingly enough, were already Christian, but they were the wrong species of Christian. They were Arians.
Uh-oh. Yeah, we don't want to go there.
They were heretics.
They were heretics.
You have to convert them to the Catholic faith, and the guys who did this are a very colorful and brave group.
And we will talk about them. God bless you. Have a wonderful Christmas, Sandra.
You've been listening to Faith in Action, underwritten in part by Marian University and by Franciscan St. Francis Health. If you'd like to suggest a guest or a topic for a future program, call us at 317-870-8400 or email mj@catholicradioindy.org. And remember, you can hear or download this program or any Faith in Action program 24/7 at CatholicRadioIndy.org. Just click on the programming tab and select podcasts.